Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, Karma Yoga, Action, Krishna Consciousness, text number 8 to 9. Naiva kinchit karomiti.
Naiva kinchit karomiti.
Yuktamanyate tatvavet.
Yuktamanyate tatvavet.
Pashan shrinvans prishan jigran.
Pashan shrinvans prishan jigran.
Ashnanga chans swapan swashsan.
Ashnanga chans swapan swashsan.
Pralapan visridan grinan.
Pralapan visridan grinan.
Unmishan nimishan api.
Unmishan nimishan api.
Indriyandi arteshu.
Indriyandi arteshu.
Vartanta iti dharyan.
Vartanta iti dharyan.
Na.
Na.
Never.
Never.
Eva. Certainly.
Certainly.
Kinchit.
Kinchit.
Anything.
Anything.
Karomiti.
Karomi.
Oh, karomi.
Karomi.
I do.
I do.
Iti.
Iti.
Thus.
Thus.
Yukta.
Yukta.
Engaged in the divine consciousness.
Engaged in the divine consciousness.
Manyeta.
Manyeta.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Tatvavit.
Tatvavit.
One who knows the truth.
One who knows the truth.
Pashan.
Pashan.
Seeing.
Seeing.
Shrinvan.
Shrinvan.
Hearing.
Hearing.
Sprishan.
Sprishan.
Touching.
Touching.
Jigran.
Jigran.
Smelling.
Smelling.
Ashnan.
Ashnan.
Eating.
Eating.
Gachan.
Gachan.
Going.
Going.
Swapan.
Swapan.
Dreaming.
Dreaming.
Shwasan, breathing. Pralapan, talking. Vishrijan,
giving up.
Grinan,
accepting.
Unimishan,
opening.
Nimishan,
closing.
Api,
in spite of.
Indriyani, the
senses.
Indriya,
Indriya,
Arteshu,
Arteshu,
in sense gratification.
In sense gratification.
Bhartante,
Bhartante,
let them be so engaged.
Let them be so engaged.
Iti,
Iti,
thus,
thus,
Dharyan,
Dharyan,
considering.
Considering.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Person, the Divine Consciousness, although engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping and breathing, always knows within himself that he actually does nothing at all. He's all speaking, evacuating, receiving, or opening or closing his eyes. He always knows that only the material senses engage with their objects and that he is aloof from them. Purport. Person in Krishna consciousness is pure in his existence, and consequently has nothing to do with any work which depends upon five immediate and remote causes: the doer, the work, the situation, the endeavor, and fortune. This is because he is engaged in the loving transcendental service of Krishna. Though he appears to be acting with his body and senses, he is always conscious of his actual position, which is spiritual engagement. In material consciousness, the senses are engaged in sense gratification, but in Krishna consciousness, the senses are engaged in the satisfaction of Krishna's senses. Therefore, the Krishna conscious person is always free, even though he appears to be engaged in the affairs of the senses. Activities such as seeing and hearing are actions of the senses meant for receiving knowledge, whereas moving and speaking, evacuating, etc., are actions of the senses meant for work. A Krishna conscious person is never affected by the actions of the senses. He cannot perform any act except in the service of the Lord, because he knows that he is the eternal servant of the Lord. Naiva kinchet kromiti yuktamanite tatvavet pashan srinvan srishan jigran ashnanga chan svapan svasan pralapan vishrijan grinan imishan imishanapi indriyandri arteshu vartanta iti dharyan. Person, the divine consciousness, although engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping and breathing, always knows within himself that he does nothing at all, because while engaged in evacuating, engaged in talking, speaking, evacuating, receiving or opening or closing his eyes. He always knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he's aloof from them. This is a carry-on from the understanding that we're not this body and that we're not the doer. And we can judge our advance in the Krishna consciousness, partly at least, by seeing how much we're identifying ourselves as the doer of our activities. When Arjuna asked Krishna in the 14th chapter, what are the symptoms of a self-realized person? Arjuna Vacha, Kim Gunai, King Lang, Kai, Arjuna Vacha, Karalin Gas Tring Gunane Tan, Atito Bhavati Prabho, Tring, Kim Acharya Katams Chaivan, Kim Gunan Udvartate. Arjuna inquired, my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior? And how does he transcend the modes of nature? So the symptoms, one who knows, by what symptoms one is known to be who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior? And how does he transcend the modes of nature? So what's the symptom? So Shiva Gavanravacha, Prakasham cha pravittim cha, Moham eva cha pandava, pravritti sampratitani, nivritani kangshiti. Udasina vanasino gunayo na vichalite gunavartanti ityevam yo vitishtite nengate samadukha sukha swasta samalostra svakankshana tulya priyapriyo dhiras tulya pritmirari pakshayo tulya priyapriyo tulya nendatma samstuti vanapamadiyo dhiras tulya mitrari pakshayo Savaramba Prityagi Gunaki Taksa Uchite. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, one who's not, does not hate illumination, attachment, or delusion when they are present, no longs for them when they are absent, remains aloof, means who's unwavering, and undisturbed through all these reactions and the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active. So that's the first answer to the first question. What are the symptoms? Symptom is tolerance, remaining aloof. Now generally, we're quite identified with the material world, and when the situation is favorable, we think everything's going all right. And when the situation is unfavorable, we think it's going wrong. But actually, we're dreaming. Because it's always wrong. If you win $1 million in a dream, you haven't won anything. And if you lose $1 million in a dream, you haven't lost anything, because it's just a dream. So the soul, he's trying to enjoy the dream, that's all. And when he's enjoying the dream, he thinks everything's all right. And when the dream turns bad, he thinks everything is bad. So that's called sense gratification. And there's some happiness in the sense gratification, and I imagine if we went to the heavenly planets, there would be more happiness. And there's certainly a lot of misery. In any case, it's just a material experience. That's what we get for coming to the material world, is a material experience. But people think that that's all there is. But it always comes down to the same thing. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. No matter how much technological advancement they make, it always comes down to the same thing. Just like I was looking at I have this program where you can download videos from the internet. So sometimes I download videos, especially about health and things like that. And then they had a little thing, you can click this and find out all the sites that you can download videos from. So I wanted to find out which sites. And there were like maybe 1,000 sites, and probably 990 of them were all pornographic. So, Technology advancement means there is no advancement. It's just a faster way of going to hell. Previously, people had to restrain their senses because they had no choice. But now people are free to become an animal as quickly as possible. Previously, people had to walk to hell, but now they have a jet plane they can take. Because people are expecting something else, that there's going to be some other activity. But that's all there is to enjoy in the material world, is eating, sleeping, mating, defending, which usually comes out in the field of intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, and meat eating. So eating means eating meat, flesh, blood, whatever, illicit sex, mating, and intoxication. Which one would be intoxication? Eating, sleeping. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. So that would be eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Intoxication, gambling. So whatever is left over is gambling. Speculation, actually. So this is the material existence, and actually we're not doing anything. Nor are we aware of what our real activities are, because we'd have to be Krishna conscious to find out what we're actually supposed to be doing. And for us, material, as it says, yani sha sarabhutanam yasam jagrati samyami tasyam jagrati samyam yani sha pashutomune. What is night for all sentient beings is the time of awakening for the self-control. And what is the time of awakening for all for the self-control? What is night for all living beings is the time of awakening. Yani shasara bhutanam tasyam jagrati samyami. So what is daytime for all these living entities is the night for the introspective sage. And what is the night for the introspective sage is the time of awakening for all beings. In other words, they think what we're talking about is just a dream. And what we say, what they're talking about is just a dream. Now, how can you tell? Well, you have to have some intelligence to be able to figure it out. In other words, only by seeing through the eyes of intelligence can we actually understand what's actually going on. Now, some things we're not going to be able to perceive so easily because we don't have enough intelligence. Hopefully we have enough intelligence to understand that this body that we're in, every part of it is changing, but we're not changing. So that should be enough to convince us that we're not doing anything. Because if I raise my hand, you know, what have I done? All I've done is somehow or another the hand gets raised, I have some desire to raise it, and it gets raised, but what did I actually do? What is my actual control over the material nature? There is some control due to desire, but ultimately I can't really claim that I'm raising the hand. Now, because I don't see how it's being raised, I automatically think, well, I must be doing it because no one else around here seems to be doing it. Because we don't see the controller behind everything, because we're not. But, as it says here in the verse, that one who actually is Krishna conscious, then he becomes aware of the fact that actually Krishna is doing the whole thing through his material nature. And that we're actually aloof. So that should be good news, because if we become Krishna conscious, then we don't have to worry about what's going to happen. Now that we're not Krishna conscious, we're worried about everything. Things that are completely beyond our control, like this virus. You know, is it looking everywhere? Is the virus here or is it there? Is it in my pocket? If you touch me, you must have. But not only that, but, you know, are they going to launch a supersonic missile and kill everyone? Is there going to be enough food? Am I going to, you know, whatever, everything. Is the sun going to become too close? Is it going to be solar flare? The material world is meant to put everyone in anxiety 24 hours a day. And even, I remember one time
I was in Los Angeles, I was going to
the Rathiatra in San Francisco. That was 74 or something. And Srila Prabhupada was in Los Angeles at that time, since so I got a chance to be with him in his, because I was a temple president, to be in the garden with him. And the first thing he asked me, he looked at me and said, "So, are you convinced about Krishna consciousness?" So, you know, I said, "Yeah, yes, Prabhupada." And Prabhupada kept on talking to Karanda Prabhu and myself. And he looked at me again 5 minutes later. He looked at me and said, "Oh, you're convinced about Krishna consciousness?" So I said, "Yes, yes, yes." And then 5 minutes later, he looked at me again and said, "So, you're convinced about Krishna consciousness?" And then he pointed to it up in the tree. I needed glasses that time. So he said, "Do you see the bird?" Yes, Prabhupada. I didn't see any bird. I figured if you told me it was a bird, there must be a bird. So he said, "Well, that bird, he knows that tomorrow he's, you know, he has a nice home. He has his wife. He knows he's going to get a nice worm." He said, "He's not worried about anything. So why are you worried about anything? Krishna is providing everything for him." I mean, the conversation went on. That was the first time probably I ever heard that Karanda said, "Yeah, this little boy came to the airport and he was inviting all of us to come and greet God when he came." Oh, this little boy, it was Guru Maharaji, one of his representatives, came and invited us to go to the airport to greet God when he comes into the airport. So when Prabhupada heard that, he said, "You should go there and kick him in the face with shoes on." That was one of Prabhupada's famous lines. And indeed, sometime later, when he was coming into the airport, someone came and took a pie and shoved it into God's face, into this little boy's face. He couldn't do anything. Prabhupada said a number of things in that conversation. Talking about Indian management, and he gave us a really disgusted look. He said, "Indian management is really terrible." Yeah, Rob said a lot of things. Then he asked if we had some men we could send to India. He wanted 50 men for his Indian projects. Anyhow. The idea is that we shouldn't be worried about Krishna providing things because he's ruling the whole universe. Everything's going on. So if he's controlling everything, why should we worry about his providing us with what we need? Or as it says, there's enough for everyone's need, but there's not enough for everyone's greed. But that takes some realization that actually Krishna is the controller. So, anukulyasya sankalpe pratikulyasya varjana rakshisya titi vishvaso goptrive varnam tata. That if we do things which are favorable for Krishna consciousness and give up the things that are unfavorable, then gradually it will be revealed that Krishna is actually controlling everything. And then we'll be convinced that Krishna is actually maintaining us, that whatever we have has been given by Krishna, and we don't need, Krishna will give us whatever we actually need. And Krishna will always protect us, at least protect our Krishna consciousness in any circumstance. And then one will always rakshisa titi vishva bhagot rive varnam tata atma vikshepa sankalpe. One will always feel, the last one is always feel meek and humble. And one will have no interest except for Krishna's interest. In other words, the soul, his real interest is Krishna's interest. Whatever is satisfying to Krishna is actually what will satisfy us. And realizing how wonderful Krishna is, we may be a little nice, but Krishna is unlimitedly nice. We love ourselves, but actually when we become aware of Krishna, we're already included within Krishna. So we'll love Krishna because he'll remind us of ourselves. But he's unlimitedly more than just ourselves. So anyone who's against Krishna, they must be against themselves, because Krishna is themselves are included within Krishna. But Krishna is unlimitedly more nicer than we are. He gives us unlimitedly more pleasure than we can give ourselves. But as long as we're attached and worried about what's going on, masuchaha, thinking that somehow or another I gotta do everything here, I have the super soul's not doing a good enough job, I better help him out. Or that maybe Vishnu's asleep, it's chaturmasa, he fell asleep early before chaturmasa, and therefore things are not going on as the way they should be going on, and therefore I should be worried. Maybe he's asleep and bad things will happen to good people. There's one rabbi, his name was Krishna. He wrote a book, Why Bad Things Will Happen to Good People. And his explanation is that actually God is a nice person, but he's become very old and senile. And therefore he can't keep things together like he used to. He's trying hard, but he just can't figure things out anymore. But don't worry that soon he's going to retire and some younger angel will take over and things should go better. So this is their explanation. Well, we know that story. Everything Krishna does is bueno. You know that story?
Yes.
What's that? So everything Krishna does is good, because when things go well, then Krishna is trying to encourage us to desire properly, because all we can do is desire. We work with our, as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, we work with our mind and intelligence, and then the senses follow, because according to, we desire, and according to what we deserve, then Krishna orders the material nature to arrange itself in order to fulfill our desires. So if we desire the right way, then Krishna will encourage us. And if we desire the wrong way, Maya will try and discourage us. Unfortunately, people got it all mixed up in Kali Yuga. They think what's which is actually the cause of their distress, they think is the cause of their happiness. So they're desiring the very things that cause them distress. Even in the mode of ignorance, they actually think happiness is in just gross sense gratification. Especially sleeping. They think great happiness is there in sleeping. The longer they can sleep, the more they think they're making progress. Prabhupada said there are coolies in India. There are messengers. They transfer papers from one office to the next. So the boss would send the coolie out, and the coolie would go to the park and sleep for 5 hours and come back after 5 hours. And the boss would say, where have you been? He said, oh, there's so much traffic. It was so hard. I just had a fight through with so many people. It took so long. I'm so exhausted. I think I should go home and sleep. They think that's their benefit. So that's the nature of ignorance. And passion means that somehow or another, we're going to arrange things that the eating, sleeping, mating, defending is going to be special this time. It's going to be glorious. They'll write books about it. They'll make movies about it. That's passion. And goodness means, you know, isn't the material world wonderful? Flowers, the trees, the birds and the bees. Just being happy with everything. Goodness. But actually, real goodness, when they asked Prabhupada, what is the happiness in the mode of goodness? And Prabhupada said, if you think you're happy, you're in the mode of ignorance. There is no happiness in the material world, even in the so-called mode of goodness. Although Krishna does say something like that. But it's all, how can you be happy when you think you're going to have to die and you don't know where you're going? Dying is one thing, but because we don't know where we're going, we're not very happy. imagine having to leave this body and having to come back to the first grade, to kindergarten again. I mean, it might be a nice kindergarten, but then start the whole thing over again. 1 + 1 = 2. Take math tests. Having to worry about your grades. Go through the whole thing over again. And, you know, you come back in Kali Yuga. As soon as you're born, they give you 28 vaccines. Takes you 10 years to get over the vaccines. You know, your food is all kinds of, you know, fast foods and whatever else. Oh, who knows, you know, what horror we may have to go through. We have to come back again. So that's, we can't begin, even when we come back in the family of devotees, still we got to learn the whole scriptures all over again. Denos me nitadehe. The whole thing all over again. So, therefore better to try to make some progress, try to change our desire, so that at least if we do have to come back, we don't have to start all over again. We'll have a little head start. We'll at least know a couple of verses easily. At least when, you know, they put us in before the Bhagavad Gita and the jewels or whatever, the money, at least we'll go for the Bhagavad Gita. A little progress. Anyhow, I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna. So this is a description of a yogi, and it says about breathing, but he will still regulate his breathing as one of the things. So how does one determine how far the endeavor has to be done, invested into controlling, for example, the same breathing and other things, and to what extent one just lets them happen?
You mean if you're a Sangha yogi?
But also it applies to other areas. If he's a karma yogi, then he has to hustle, as they say, but at the same time...
Well, it's a natural progression. In other words, even in the Ashtanga Yoga system, in the beginning, yama, niyama, which one tries to become a human being. And then, after that, then one can sit peacefully. In other words, the whole idea, Ishvara Pradana is niyama, is ultimately to understand that the goal is to worship Krishna, God. And then in order to do that, they more or less know the whole path. They have an overview of what steps are. So after you become convinced, Ishvara Badan, you're clean, you're truthful, you don't steal, etc., you become civilized. And you realize that the idea is celibacy, and you have to realize God, and you sit down in asana. But you don't just sit in asana. The idea of asana is to help pranayama. But the idea of pranayama is not just to regulate the breathing. It's to control the mind. So that pratyahara. So that you're not attracted to the external sense objects. And that pratyahara is actually meant for dharana. So you can somehow or another start thinking about Krishna. And when you become then pranayama, although it may be practiced, or pratyahara, maybe, you know, even asana, may be practiced somewhat, but these things become less important as you get into dharana, and then dhyana, and then samadhi. And in samadhi, then when you're actually fixed in samadhi, and your consciousness is pure by meditating on Vishnu, these asana and the other things have really no meaning. They're not really important. One doesn't have to be so strict. the practice of all these other things. Because one has captured Vishnu. So the same thing with us. Now we're doing Sanatana Bhakti, and the rules and regulations are quite important, because without them we're back in material consciousness. But when there's no more material consciousness, there's only Krishna consciousness, then all these rules and regulations don't mean anything, really, except to show an example. Because everything we look at reminds us of Krishna. Our whole experience is only of Krishna. Everything we see and smell and taste, everything reminds us deeper into Krishna consciousness. So after the stage of liberation, then devotional service becomes spontaneous. But still one follows the process, because until we come to the stage of prema bhakti, or at least the higher stages of bhava, as long as one's actual feelings towards Krishna are not awakened, there's always a tendency to start having feelings towards other things in the material world again. Maya is quite tricky. So therefore some, even in the stage of Raghunuga Bhakti, one still performs regulated service, but according to the things that actually attract one to Krishna. One is not so much trying to get out of, like in Pratyahara, trying to get out of material consciousness, but one is on the other side, one is trying to get deeper into spiritual consciousness. And there are things that obviously facilitate that, like chanting Hare Krishna and worshiping the deities. And so we find even in the advanced devotees, these things go on too. Serving the devotees, living in the holy place, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So one concentrates on those things. One doesn't have to concentrate on fasting and all these other things we have to do. So the point is, when you're on a lower stage, then you practice, and after a while, you're attracted to something higher. And when you're attracted to something higher, you don't have to be so attentive to every aspect of the lower stage. You gradually forget about it, because it's just important. You start wondering, how did I ever get attracted to that? Just like every class we don't tell people don't go to McDonald's. We hope we don't have to say that. Because we know people are not attracted, the devotees aren't attracted to that. But how to eat prasadam with devotion, maybe we have to talk about that. Because there's things about even eating we have to learn. But we don't have to emphasize don't go to Kentucky Fried Chicken or McDonald's, because even if they delivered it here by mistake. Wow, we're so fortunate. No, we wouldn't even look at it. We wouldn't know what to do with it. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavad Gita Kidai. Srila Prabhupada Kidai. More permanent.